go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's all-purpose cleaner cleans and kills 99.9% of viruses and bacteria. It can be used on hard, non-porous surfaces like the kitchen, bathroom, and other areas in your home. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Everybody loves a lover. I'm a lover. Everybody loves me. Anyhow, that's how I feel. Wow, I feel just like a Pollyanna.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another installment of the world famous number one podcast, In Bed with Nick and Megan, starring the illustrious Nick Offerman.
Good evening.
Featuring his poor wife, Megan. And today, extra super special guest starring Mr. Jackie Blackie.
JB.
Hey.
Known to you simply as Jack Black. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, how are you? I love it. I love it when you call me Jackie.
Jackie Blackie. I've always called you that, I think.
You're like the only one who calls me Jackie other than my cousins up in Washington State.
Maybe we're related. Maybe I'm a cousin of yours and it's in the blood.
Maybe. You from Spokane?
Could be.
I love Spokane.
Spokane. Hell of a town.
Home of White's Boots.
Is that right?
Yeah, really great old school custom lumberjack work boot company.
That's your go-to boot, the White's boot.
Yeah, that's my jam.
I never knew that about you.
I did not expect this to take a sharp left into work boots, but here we are.
I took you for a Timberland kind of guy.
Someday. That's my cash.
Don't you have Red Wings also?
Yeah, I'll wear a Red Wing.
What about Sorels? I like them Sorels.
That's nice for a medium hike. A nice Sorel.
We're here to talk about boots today, everybody.
Welcome to Boot Talk.
So,
yeah.
Text us with any boot questions you might have.
I bought some cowboy boots recently.
Oh, I saw you dancing I'm trying to say that I've never seen anyone dance quite that well wearing cowboy boots.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, it's actually real good if you're doing a heel-toe kind of dance. You can spin on that heel almost.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Almost like an infinite amount of twirls.
You're so graceful, but also a lot of those moves, like those Russian sort of squat kicks you were doing, requires quite a lot of strength.
It's crazy, athleticism that you display and the height of the kick that you kick like above your head.
Yeah, yeah.
He's limber.
Well, I haven't had any formal training, but, you know, a life of musical theater will lead to those kinds of skills.
I saw you the first time at the Old Largo on Fairfax way back in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Tenacious D. And I thought... Everybody in there thought, who the fuck is that guy? He's so amazing. We both were. It was your band, so great. But how did that all come together? I mean, we now, and you very nicely, we perform at Largo. Now I have my band, Nancy and Beth, which is, you know, very junior to Tenacious D, but you came and played with us once. That was so nice.
100%. Love Nancy and Beth.
How did your whole Largo thing come about?
Well, you know, we were kind of on the scene doing our Tenacious D routine around 94 was our first kind of official gig. And we played at a little place called Al's Bar in downtown LA. And there's only like 12 people in the audience. And we only had one song. It was tribute. And we were opening for a friend of ours, Steve Marmarco. He had a band called the Abe Lincoln Story. We approached it with our usual zeal, like we were playing to 100,000 people, but it was really just some drunken hipsters and David Cross. He was in the audience. He was one of the drunken hipsters. And he gave us our next gig. He was like, hey, do you guys want to come play this sort of like live version of Mr. Show in the mid-90s? And then we started playing around town, little clubs. And then eventually we landed at Largo. That just became like the place where all the indie comics were going and doing shows. And that's how we discovered it. And I ended up living like right across the street from Largo, right behind Cantor's Deli.
Oh, yeah.
So me and Kyle would be writing jams over there. And then we'd just walk across the street and play it at Largo. It was a real sweet deal we had there for a while.
I feel like I must have seen you in 96 or 97 there. Would that be about right?
That's about right. That's the time.
God, so cool.
What was your go-to sandwich at Canner's?
Tuna melt all the way. Tuna melt with some of those fries.
I've had it, man. That tuna melt is sick.
It's so really good.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You know, everybody used to go to Canner's. Do they still? I don't think so. Not as much.
It might be. It might be if I'm in a certain mood. My electric chair meal. I might say, hey, before you fry me, hook me up one of those sweet tuna melt and fries from Cantor's. I like to do, I have a technique with my Cantor's tuna melt. Squeeze that tuna melt till some of that cheese and tuna drips off onto the plate. Mm-hmm. Scoop it up with a fry, but don't forget to dip it in a little bit of ketchup. Oh, those flavors together.
How are you planning to get to death row?
I there's no way I would deserve it. I would never do anything that would deserve that kind of an end. But
mistaken identity.
Yeah, I think it was a guy that looks just like me did something awful and framed me. There's a DNA. I don't know what happened.
By God, we'll get to the bottom of it.
All right. We'll get you out if that happens. And we'll bring you Cantor's in the car when we pick you up.
Although, you know, they say that anyone is capable of anything under certain circumstances. There's certainly some decent people serving life sentences that just were pushed to the brink and they...
Is there anybody if you were in a restaurant, is there anybody that if they walked in, you would walk out? Because I think I would do that if OJ came in.
Probably do it
if our president walked in.
Yeah.
If OJ came in, I would definitely quickly check for all the cutlery on the table.
Oh, my God. Did you hear that this is real. There's a new book that just came out. About Mitch McConnell. Did you hear about this? I can't remember the name of the guy who wrote it. It's called Mitch Please. That's real. Isn't that great?
That is great.
So funny. Mm. Is there anybody you would want? Who would you?
You know, the thing is, Mitch seems to thrive on that, though. He celebrates his role as the Grim Reaper.
He loves it, yeah.
He likes it. In fact, there's a whole movement on the right that celebrates the triggering of the left.
The tears, yeah. The cruelty is the point.
Oh, yeah. That's the delicious nectar that they thrive on. So I try not to give them the satisfaction of being too upset by their bullshit, an endless stream of bullshit that seemed to be designed to make me furious.
That's a good stance of wisdom when you have a group of people who openly admit that they enjoy causing people pain.
Yeah.
They're like, yes, that's our thing.
And they're all Christians, though.
Yeah, of course.
Don't forget.
But it's a great stance
that you've espoused, Jack, go together.
Yeah, to make sure you take a deep breath and say, you know what?
But that's the Christian thing to do, is what we're talking about.
That's right. You turn the other cheek.
Which they do not do.
No.
Okay. So, Jackie, what were some of the funny, fun things you wanted to talk about today?
Well, the first thing I'd like to talk about is the email that I received that said, hey, instead of asking you a bunch of generic questions, they're actually hoping that you will come up with some things that are on your mind that you want to discuss. And my immediate reaction was, of course they want me to do that because that's pure gold. If I bring them the things that I most want to talk about, that's a deep reservoir of magic. Of course they want that. And so I hunkered down last night and just started writing down the things that I'm most obsessed with. And when I look at my list of things on my iPhone note app, it doesn't look like solid gold, but here goes nothing.
You'll be surprised.
I'm really obsessed with this Tim Heidecker guy. I don't know if you've heard about him. He's a he's a comedian who he's on that Adult Swim an awful lot. It seems like his absolutely production company is responsible for like 75% of the content on Adult Swim. He's like everywhere. And like everybody else's show, he's responsible for tons of stuff.
He's deeply enjoyable and runs this great gamut of like the most wonderfully stupid, bizarre comedy, but also is incredibly intelligent and has a great sense of satire at the same time.
So you share my obsession with this Renaissance man named Tim Heidecker.
Mm-hmm. I refer to him as Beef Boy these days.
Beef Boy, that's his new jam, Beef Boy. But, you know, he also has produced, like, what's this kid, Nathan For You?
Yeah.
And
Nathan Fielder.
Yeah.
And tons of other ones that I can't remember right now. But, the one that I'm most obsessed with right now is this little show that's like a movie review show called On Cinema at the Cinema, where he and his buddy, Greg Turkington, also known as Neil Hamburger, just sit down and it's kind of like a Roger Ebert, you know, Siskel and Ebert style, except that Tim doesn't really know anything about movies. And even though his name is Tim Heidecker on the show, he's this sort of asshole right winger version of himself. And you watch these episodes, they're only like 10 minutes each, and everything gets five bags of popcorn. That's their rating system. And over the course of these like 12 seasons, there's like more than 100 episodes of On Cinema at the Cinema. You really start to focus on what's happening behind the scenes of the show in his personal life. And there's all kinds of stupid, insane drama and drug addiction and intrigue that you get kind of sucked into this universe of stupidity and the bickering between these two guys. And then they talk about a new TV show that Tim Heidecker is doing that you can also go see that is within the universe of this asshole character he's playing called Decker. And he's like this right wing action hero. And it's the fucking worst piece of shit you've ever seen. But it's so hilarious. And I'm trying to think of any other comedian who's out there that has committed so intensely to not just a character for one show that goes on for hundreds of episodes, but two or three shows that stay in the universe of this reality that he's created. I think that he's kind of a genius.
Nick, do you remember what the bit was that he did with Tig? The very first time we saw Tig, which was in the small room at Largo.
His bit was, he was doing this bit where he was pretending to be new at stand-up.
So it was very simple.
It was him doing a clumsy novice's stand-up. And his main joke was like, he was trying to tease out a sense of humor around the different kinds of Coke, where he's like talking about Diet Coke, but then there's Coke Zero, right? And
so there aren't any actual jokes. You're just listing the different kinds of Coke.
And that was probably the first, we found out who he was. We were so smitten with him. And then from there, turned our attention to Tim and Eric. Awesome show. Great job. But so I now tour and like play an acoustic guitar and, you know, sing songs that I've written. And I was playing this weird festival in northern British Columbia. I forget the name of it, where everybody camps out for like 3 days, Bumber Squatch or something. And everybody has been like doing mushrooms for 3 days. It's day three. Me and Tim are about to go on. I'm following him in the comedy tent where there's like 8,000 stoned people standing in the sun. And he says, man, this crowd feels terrible. Like, I don't think they're gone. Like, there's no jokes. We need to like just get up there and create a spectacle. So he said, I'm just going to try this out. Let's see how it goes. And he just pretended that he was tripping on acid. He went on stage and like his hat, his like trucker cap precariously perched. He would like do these bits and like look at his hand, but then his hat would fall off and it would scare the shit out of him. He kept terrifying himself with his falling hat. And I stood backstage and said, I love the courage, the absolute fearlessness of this guy. And because the thing is, he's taking a huge risk. He could totally bomb. They could like boo him off the stage, but instead, you know, they by and large adored him and screamed for him. He's great.
Well, it sounds like he was right though. They were probably frying on acid. He just thought he's going to fight fire with fire. He's going to see their acid and raise them.
They recognized his every nuance.
Yeah. I'm glad we share that appreciation for the performance art.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next on the list of your musings.
By the way, we're never going to get through my list. I made such a list. We could go honestly for 5 hours. Does it seem like I'm yelling? Because my Bose headphones are making me very quiet. So I'm kind of like loud enough.
It seems like you're enthusiastic.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I am projecting. I'm embarrassed by some of these, but I'm not going to skip any of them. But lately, I've been very moved by Joaquin Phoenix's performance. And I know this is dumb. He won the Oscar. Everyone knows he's fucking great in Joker. But I just feel like it needs, I don't think it gets enough discussion.
Okay, well, tell us, because that was one of two movies we didn't watch because we didn't want to go that dark.
Didn't want
at the time
the bummer content.
The whole tone of the movie, but at the time we might reconsider that. So tell us all about it.
I agree. And to be honest with you, I didn't want to see Joker for the same reason. I thought, oh, it's going to be a drag. I heard that it's a dark, gritty retelling of this legendary, you know, supervillain. I was like, no, thank you. But my son, Sammy, my 13-year-old boy, who obviously is too young to go see this movie, was dying to see this movie, and and made me promise, and I used it as a bribe for doing some kind of a homework assignment or something. For some reason, I was like, I'll take you if you do this. And he was like, deal. So we go to the ArcLight and watch it. And Joaquin crushes it. And so does Todd Phillips. It's like this amazing. I was so blown away. I was not expecting it to be a deep, dark parable for our times. And for
during the time it came out, I was going through a hard time in my life. So I decided to forego it. But I think now I really want to see it, actually. Is
well,
that weird?
Yeah. No, I mean, based on apparently he does a very good job of acting in the film.
Mm-hmm. He does incredible.
I read a piece that said that. And I think basically the things, you know, the current events made the idea of like a well-crafted portrait of toxic masculinity, mm-hmm. or like, you know, the basically in a way, an updated Taxi Driver / King of Comedy.
Totally.
Where I was like, yeah, I don't like, I think later on when we're feeling good and the sun is shining and there's no virus sweeping across the nation, maybe we'll take a look at mm-hmm. Joker.
Well, for a while I was angry at it because I was like, hey, they really borrowed a lot from King of Comedy and Taxi Driver. But then after talking with a documentarian friend of mine who I really respect his take on it, was saying, yeah, but everything's been done and it's an art form in and of itself to do, you know, for lack of a better term, mashups of old movies. And it's not really recycling if you pour your own creative take on a combination of old movies. And to say, hey, I want to make a superhero movie from DC Comics, one of the most famous iconic characters, but I want to pour it through the filter of these two Scorsese films. And to pull that off is a monumental feat, and has to be it got my respect. And I love those movies, Taxi Driver and King of Comedy. So initially I was defensive, and I felt like, hey, this is bullshit. You can't just steal other.
No, that's a great lesson for the modern day, and it reminds me of when Greg Daniels and team decided to make an American version of The Office, and and the world, all of us comedy heads especially, were like, how dare you?
Yeah.
Do not touch the work of Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he made it and we were like, yeah, this is clumsy. It's, oh, hang on. This is amazing. Guys, pull up a chair. Yeah. Ladies, check it out.
Hey, Jack, did you see Uncut Gems?
I did. I love Uncut Gems.
Yeah. So, we did too. And
the Safdie brothers.
Yeah. Oh,
so good.
And that movie kind of.
Did you bring this up because of you were thinking of what other Scorsese ripoffs there are out there?
Yeah. Well, we were thinking of like Dog Day Afternoon and all those movies from the 70s. Right. You know, it kind of had that.
Francis Ford as well. Yeah.
Yeah. But I loved, we loved that movie. And Adam Sandler was great in that movie.
Hell yeah. He crushed it.
Oh,
it really made me think of that Goodfellas second half, when Ray Liotta is doing coke and super paranoid of like the helicopters that are flying over him, and he's always pushing the envelope and doubling down on really risky maneuvers, that it had that flavor to it.
But, yeah, definitely.
I was going to deep dive into the Joaquin's performance on one specific scene that I thought was the best acting of the movie, the best part of his performance.
Do it.
I'm not going to because it would be spoiler alert for you.
We don't care.
Well, I'll just say this. It's on the subway where it's a pivotal scene for him when he's confronted by these like Wall Street jock assholes that are harassing a woman on the subway. And he starts laughing because he has this mental illness where he laughs as a defense mechanism, and then he can't stop laughing once he started, even though in his eyes you can see he's in horrible pain and fear and terror. He's still laughing, and she uses his crazy laughing, and they get distracted by, hey, what's so funny, asshole? And she kind of like uses that to get the hell out of there. And while she's sort of running away, he's looking at her and he's laughing, but in his eyes he's saying, wait, please help me, don't leave me here alone. And it's it just gave me chills, gave me goosebumps in a way that I don't care about fucking acting performances anymore, but that moment was like, oh, I wish, yeah, I could do that. How do you do that? It's like a magic trick.
It's kind of amazing, yeah.
When you see real emotion like that, it's like, it's superhuman almost.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Jay Blanco, what's next on your list that's turning out to be fantastic?
Come on. My list sucks, but we must persevere.
We've committed.
You guys saw King of Comedy while we're on the subject, right? The Scorsese masterpiece,
yeah,
with De Niro.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
And Jerry Lee motherfucking Lewis.
Mm-hmm. Jerry best, Lewis, not Jerry best, Lee Lewis.
Did I say Jerry Lee?
Yeah.
How good is Jerry Lewis in King of Comedy?
So good.
So good.
One of those comedians who can really turn it out when the drama comes around.
He never played an asshole like that in any of his other films, but on that one, he really...
It's so gutsy how unpleasant he's willing to be. America's sweetheart clown. It's like, no, fuck you. Fuck you. My audience, go fuck yourself.
He's probably waiting for his entire life to be able to do something different.
And but what are you going to say?
In later years, I am as big a fan of De Niro as anybody. But I've always found it really interesting that I don't think he's particularly, you know, it's obviously like the Michael Jordan of acting, film acting, but I don't think he's very funny.
Right.
But in King of Comedy, his portrayal of Rupert Pupkin, which is, of course, like tragic and super sad, he manages through wearing the mask of Rupert Pupkin to be incredibly hilarious.
Yes.
But by going for something completely different.
Yeah.
By going for a failure of comedy, he actually hits home run after home run.
Yeah, it's that desperation. And you get the feeling he wasn't really going for comedy when he was making it. He wanted to just get this character, this guy who wanted so desperately to be loved and to be respected. And I was watching it for like the fifth time or something. I don't think I've seen any movie more times than King of Comedy. I just love it and obsessed with it, that performance. And everybody in it just hits it out of the park.
Is it, if memory serves, it's been a while for me, but Sandra Bernhardt?
Sandra Bernhardt plays his like cohort, obsessive fan of Jerry Lewis. But only on like the last time that I watched it, because I watched it with my son to say, now look at this movie to see where he got all that stuff for Joker. And throughout the movie, he's talking to his mom, who's off camera, and she's always nagging him. And he's like, Mom, I'm working on my comedy. But then at the end, when you finally see his stand-up comedy routine on Jerry's show, he talks about his dead parents and his dead mom who's been dead for 10 years. And you realize, oh, fuck. He's talking to no one. She's not even there.
Yeah.
And I didn't even notice that the first few times that I watched the movie, that the whole time it was in his head. So, yeah, there's that.
All right. Hit us with the next gem.
I think a movie that people didn't really notice last year, one of the best movies of the year, Midsommar.
Oh, I want to see that because of Florence Pugh.
Oh, now what is her claim to fame other than Midsommar?
Well, she was in Little Women. And
Yeah.
And she has some YouTube videos where she, you know, sang through her teenage angst in her bedroom when she was like 14, 15 years old. But I wanted to see Midsommar. But again, during the winter, I was going through a hard time and I didn't want to watch scary, dark movies.
Anything that was bleak, we were like, save that for later.
We couldn't finish watching the one about the nuclear meltdown.
Oh, Chernobyl.
We couldn't finish watching that. We got like 3 episodes in.
Oh,
like,
my God.
That's so the amazing. Scariest show I've ever seen in my life. It's so good.
I did not want to watch that at all. I was dragged kicking and screaming to that one. But enough people told me that I had to do it. And finally, Kyle, my partner in my band, Tenacious D, he said, you have to watch it. And I was like, fuck, okay. And so I sat down with Tanya and we watched it. And, you know, it's one of those things where the subject matter, we already know Chernobyl. It's a nuclear disaster. Yeah. Why would you watch a movie about it? We already know how it ends horribly.
Mm-hmm.
But the details I had no idea about, especially the heroism, the people that put themselves in harm's way to save the people of Russia and the world from this disaster that, as bad as it was, could have been so much worse. And now that I say that, now that those words come out of my mouth, I realize there's no time more relevant than right now with people putting themselves in harm's way to fucking... Oh,
totally. Yeah. And the guts of whistleblowers like standing up in the face of popular opinion and the incredibly ham-fisted economy-driven forces that are like, can everyone just shut up about their relatives dying? Because the stock market has really taken a hit.
It's so relevant. You're
so
right.
Crazy.
And the nationalism that goes along with that, like it's a, nothing's worse than the embarrassment of being, you know, the country that has this disaster and, you know, feeling responsible for that. They would do anything and then wait till the last second until they absolutely have to tell the world, hey, we fucked up, this thing happened. But wow. And there's some scenes in there where there's these regular people are just like, okay, I know that this is going to end in me, you know, getting horribly sick. I'm going in anyway. Let's go. Let's go. And it's just like, it makes me want to cry. It's so brave. And I know what you mean about like these, these dark and scary movies about, you have to be in the right mindset to take those.
Can
dives.
I just ask you, Midsommar, just based on the sort of like adjectives I saw, you know, on Twitter around it, and like the title, is it a pagan solstice, like Wicker Man kind of storyline?
Yes.
Yeah. Hell
It is about a very strange little group of people and their rituals out in the sticks of Sweden, somewhere in the either Sweden or the Netherlands. I'm not sure which one. And the thing is that
it's Sweden.
It's dark and twisted, but then you question, is it in some ways vastly superior to the society that we live in back at home? It's a strange thing that it does to your mind over the course of the film, where you almost feel like you're joining this strange.
Oh, good. This is a great session of cultural recommendations.
It's really making me want to watch these movies.
Dude, honestly, and maybe it's bad parenting, but all of these things I wouldn't have watched if it weren't for my boy's taste. He's got great taste in movies. Both of my boys do, but they're very dark, and I wouldn't watch these things because I'm a sensitive soul. But I'm grateful to them for their bravery when it comes to cinema.
I didn't realize but, that the guy that directed that, I just Googled it. He's American. I thought that was Swedish film or something. Yeah.
I would have thought that too.
His name's Ari Aster.
I'm sorry. I'm turning your podcast into an episode of On Cinema at the Cinema. All I want to talk about. Well, it's because of these quarantine times. Yeah. It's all about movies. And
it's all,
what
it's all meta within meta.
What should we watch tonight? You know, it's kind of all I think about. But did you guys see The Lighthouse?
Yeah.
So good.
Boom.
Yeah.
So good.
So good.
Oh yeah. I mean, one of the ways we know each other is you were a member of the theater company, the Actors Gang.
Yeah.
And we would see each other in productions, and Megan and I were in a company called Evidence Room. And The Lighthouse immediately just made me think of, like, specifically an Ionesco production of Exit the King that John C. Reilly did at the Actors Gang. But
yeah,
the Lighthouse seemed like it could have been an Actors Gang production.
Totally.
So that it's a movie that came out in 2019, and it's black and white. It's super, super stylized. It's two sailors in a lighthouse together in a remote location where the weather becomes increasingly more and more problematic. And it's Jake Gyllenhaal and what's his name?
No, it's Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Robert Pattinson. Yeah.
That's right.
The other Gyllenhaal.
The other Gyllenhaal.
I like that Gyllenhaal too.
Sure. Yeah, me too. He's really good.
Robert Pattinson, I never really thought anything about the guy until The Lighthouse.
Holy,
and I was like,
yeah,
shit.
I saw him in something else a few years ago and I thought, oh, okay.
It was pretty revelatory. Really, yeah.
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 I mean, I didn't see him in something else a few years ago. So I just knew him as the guy from the werewolf
Twilight
vampire movies. So I knew he was a dreamboat, sure.
Yeah.
But then
we know this.
He stepped up and like chewed some scenery in a really satisfying way, held his own with the great Dafoe. I mean, Willem Dafoe is the edifice of weird stylized acting movies.
He's amazing. What a career he's had.
He really is.
First time I ever saw him, To Live and Die in L.A.
Oh.
Why did I say it like that? To Live and Die in L.A. To Live and Die in L.A. is obviously the way you're supposed to say it.
Yeah, there are no hard and fast rules.
But his face was like this mask of terror. He had this incredible look.
Oh,
That, you know, kind of made you step back a few feet. But over the course of his career, he's had these incredible roles, and then he has also kept one foot in experimental theater, like the Wooster Group and all these crazy things. See, just like Tim Heidecker, I like these artists that, you know, they, you see them in commercial movies, but then they also have one foot in, like,
avant-garde
performance art. Yeah,
they're avant-garde performers. Yeah, but then they can be commercial if they need to be.
Do you ever dip your toe into the avant-garde?
Megan. That's all I really ever wanted to do. But then all I actually do is be on sitcoms. So it's worked out great.
So maybe it's time for a little avant-garde.
Jack. I do think so.
A little off Broadway.
Or off.
Wait, even. No, you can't go triple off. That's one too many. Offs.
That's when you're risking incarceration.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today for generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, it'll be the spot for everyone. From book club to game night, the kids can even host their friends.
Whoa, it smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick Scented Oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Hmm. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh air, Wick.
I saw Willem Dafoe only a couple years ago in a crazy production at UCLA in the theater that I saw you do your one-man show.
Oh, at Royce Hall.
At Royce Hall, doing this thing with Baryshnikov.
What?
And it was directed by this crazy opera director named, it was like a cow, he's a Texas cowboy, like killer opera director, super avant-garde, named Wilson.
Robert Wilson.
Robert Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one.
And
it was incredible dancing and lighting and strange, just like a performance art piece.
Listen, side note, if you live in the Los Angeles area and you're not checking out the subscription calendar at Royce Hall at UCLA, you're missing out. They have the coolest. We've seen so much crazy goodness there.
Yeah.
Across the board.
Let's hope that we can get back there.
Yeah.
Sooner.
I'm thinking probably... I don't know when people are going to feel comfortable getting back into big groups of people again. They're probably not until 2021.
It depends what happens with the if there's going to be a resurgence in the fall.
This germophobia is going to stick.
Yeah.
You know, like we all just become permanent germophobes.
You know what, though? The thing is, once we get that.
The vaccine,
The vaccine. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Once we get the vaccine, I think then it's like, that's the silver bullet. Let's party.
Yeah.
Because even if we get it, then the vaccine zip. So I'm feeling pretty optimistic about a vaccine just because science, dude.
Yeah.
We've got science on our side. Get the blue demon computer on the case. It should go a little faster than it did in 1890.
Yeah, it's going to take a while, but they're going to do it. It'll probably be about 18 months or so.
We'll be back in Royce Hall kicking out the jams.
We'll be making sweet love at Woodstock before you know it.
Seeing obscure dance companies.
They say you can still make love as long as you wear the mask.
Oh.
Yeah.
Honey. Intermission.
Jack. Thanks for nothing, Jack.
I don't know what you know. Okay.
Wow. All right, what's next?
This one's painful, but I feel like I should tell it anyway, because that's always the best content.
Yeah.
When it cuts to the bone, the personal stuff.
Sure.
And my struggles with my weight. I don't know if you know this, but I know I seem like I'm super comfortable with my body. I do underpants dances on the internet for millions. Mm-hmm. Who have seen me in my underpants. But the truth is, I am always struggling with it and trying to fucking lose weight. I want to lose weight. I don't want to be skinny. Honestly, I'm like 240 right now. I know that my target weight is like 215. I'm 5'6" and a half. And a half. Who puts a half on that? Just round it up or down.
Nick is 11 and a half years younger than me, not 12.
I'm 5'10 and 7/8, my friend.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. Okay.
We've all got our halves.
But 215, I think, is where I should be. And 5'7", 215 is pretty heavy. You know, that's pretty big for 5'7", but I know that that's perfect for me. That's my lean, mean fight machine. Lean, mean 215. But to get down there is so impossible because I'm fucking hungry. Mm-hmm. When I diet and I like get to the end of my like calories for the day, it's like, there's no way I'm going to bed with, I'm looking down the barrel. There's another 6 or 7 hours before I fall asleep. This is not happening. So then I like And I think about it, and I think about some of the other people over the course of history who've had the same struggles. Marlon Brando. Orson Welles.
Wow, I'm noticing a pattern.
So maybe I'm a genius.
The big three.
That's Orson, my takeaway.
Brando, Orson Welles, and Jables, the big three.
The big three.
The big three, literally and figuratively.
You know what? Jack, I told you this a long time ago, I think. I first, when I saw you in Bob Roberts, a great film from like 92 or so.
Yeah.
Tim Robbins film.
First film and his, Tim Robbins' first directorial.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And you, you have a supporting role, but you play this like super intense, like campaign intern or like, but you're like kind of scary, very intense young man.
I was one of three psycho fans of Bob Roberts, and we were all like teenage Bob Roberts wannabes in trench coats, and we were super right wing, hardcore.
All due respect to the other two, you stood out quite a bit. I happen to know that you're about, I think you're about, what are you, August 1969?
That's exactly right. August 28th.
Okay, so you're about 10 months older than me.
Yeah.
So when I saw you in Bob Roberts, I was 22. And I thought you like really spoke to me. Like I was like, I feel like I could be brothers with this guy. Like I really always felt a real familial vibe with you.
Yeah.
And now we're about 50.
Yeah.
And I want to say, It's a thing. Like I was a football player in high school, and I used to be much more trim. Like I used to be much more castable as perhaps someone who would wear tights and a cape.
Yeah.
And for most of my adult life, I've been more husky, and like it's always an issue because of this society and this business that, you know, encourages us to look in the mirror whenever possible and then compare ourselves to whatever Brad Pitt poster is making the rounds. And I just want to say, I mean, I'm very happy that I do focus on my health when it comes to my weight, but I would encourage you again, like, you know, as we get into this chapter, this age of our lives, you definitely want to like keep an eye on your health so that you're not taking years from your life overweight or whatever. But at the same time, look how majestic your life is. Like you are so beloved. You have an amazing family. Yeah. You spread joy and love and goodness. I mean, with a godly power, when it comes to entertaining the people, you are a Brando or an Orson Welles. And so while we want you to be happy and healthy, I also would encourage you to like fucking get to a place where in one of my books where I talk about my tips for delicious living, it's like rule number six, avoid the mirror. Just don't look in the mirror. If you're getting kissed and if you're getting cast, what else do you need? Have a sandwich, fucking go watch some scary movies.
Dude, those are good, heartwarming words. I appreciate those.
It's a tough one though, because, you know, I was a dancer growing up and my father also was very critical of women and of their bodies. And so I have a thing, and I'm small. Like I'm a size 2 or a size 4. I mean, I'm small.
Megan weighs 18 grams.
And I had, and I had a good long session in front of the mirror just this very morning thinking that I was a fat pig. And then I was like, oh wait, no, I'm actually not. But it's just crazy that, you know, we're just acculturated to, aside from having our own individual triggers, you know, we're just acculturated to feel like we have to look a certain way.
Well, you know, I recently watched that Marlon Brando documentary, Listen to Me, Marlon, which I highly recommend to anyone who's a fan of Brando's oeuvre. It's cool to get a glimpse behind the scenes. And what I was struck by was how insecure he was about his weight. Because I just always assumed he doesn't give a shit what anyone thinks about him. He doesn't care about, you know, the industry or any of that crap. He eats, he's fat because he wants to be fat, or he doesn't give a shit. But the truth is he did give a shit. And it affected him deeply how much people thought about how heavy he was. And he left behind this these audio recordings that are played intermittently throughout the documentary, where he's just talking to himself. It's an audio journal, and he is kind of trying to hypnotize himself by giving himself positive affirmations and helping himself through his need to eat and his hunger issues. And it's like, I do not need to eat the apple pie that makes me feel like I'm loved by my mother. I do not need to do this and that. And it's like, oh shit.
Wow.
And there was something sad about it, but there was also something that I took comfort in. It was like, yeah, see, even my heroes struggle with weight. It's not something that, you know, I'm alone with. This is like a real fucking beast that's, you know, it's not different than alcoholism or other addictions, because it all goes to the same place. What is that chemical that your brain releases for pleasure?
Dopamine.
Endorphins.
Dopamine. Yeah. Endorphins, whatever it is. It triggers that same like place in the brain that so incredibly hard to resist and to conquer. That need.
Yeah. It's animal. Yeah. It's the giving yourself the feeling of security of like, okay, this, now I feel like I'm safe in my cave. I've eaten a rabbit. We have a fire and my family is safe.
I think all of us have at least one area where we have major issues. With some people, it's money. They don't want to spend any, or they want to spend it all too fast, or it's sex, or it's drugs, or it's all, you know. And with some people, it's food, and that's just the way it is. I mean, I will always, until my dying day, be extremely aware of everything I eat during any given day, every single thing. And like, oh, well, if I eat this today, then I have to eat such and such tomorrow because, you know, and I mean, it's sad. I've gotten a lot better, and I never had like a full blown eating disorder, which is good. But almost every woman that I know has had one, especially women in Los Angeles. Like every woman I know who moved to Los Angeles from another place immediately developed an eating disorder. It's rough.
Yeah, and speaking of Brad Pitt, did you check out those abs in Once Upon a Time?
Oh, come on. Forget about it.
How's he pull that rabbit out of the bag?
You know
I
what?
Wish that he and Jennifer Aniston would get back together. Don't they know we're in a global crisis right now, and we need some good news?
There's no way Brad's not listening to this. So
yeah,
speak to him.
It's even sadder than Joaquin, his obsession with this podcast.
They might be listening it. They might get together and listen to it.
Yeah,
like a Thursday night hang.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that Brad is with Jennifer Aniston right now. We don't know.
I wish they were quarantined together.
It's possible.
Jack, here's a interesting tangent. So Kumail recently went through the superhero.
Oh my god! Yes.
So there's a podcast of Dax Shepard has a podcast, and
yes,
and Rob McElhenney from Always Sunny,
yeah,
and Kumail, all three get together. They've all done this where they go through crazy bodybuilder obsessions for comedy roles. Like Kumail was for a superhero, Rob's was for Always Sunny. Did you see that crazy dance that he did?
Yes.
He got insanely ripped. And then Dax did it for a movie.
And yeah.
Because I follow Kumail, I listened to this. They have a really interesting conversation where they're really, frankly, self-effacing, where they're like, okay, first of all, no one likes guys who look like this. Like, especially three straight guys.
Really ripped like that.
And they're like, no women want dudes. The only people who want dudes to look like that are other dudes that grew up watching Rambo. We're fuck yeah, I want to get Rambo ripped. But the reason I bring it up is because they talk about Brad Pitt's abs and generally. One of the tricks for looking like that is that you're actually not getting that muscular. What you're doing is you're removing all of the water and salt from your body to the point of dangerous.
Right.
So when people look like crazy, like the Hemsworths, for example.
Yeah.
They're not like bodybuilders like Schwarzenegger. They just suck all of the water out of their bodies. So it looks like their biceps are like a bowling ball.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's actually really dumb. And they are wonderfully funny about how dumb it is and like how narcissistic it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the thing. And so I've quit drinking water. And I'm hanging out on my roof.
It's so dumb. I'd like to see my abs this one time, though. It's on my bucket list. As dumb as and unhealthy as it may be.
I'm not good at moderation. Like, I love beer so much. And I don't keep beer in the house because if I get six beers, I'm not going to be like, okay, I can drink one a night for six nights. Even if I think that, I've learned that I'll drink one and be like, well, I should have at least two.
Cut to. This feels kind of good. Another one's going to feel even better.
And so I have to maintain a pretty constant vigilance. So, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, I just finally started running. I hadn't done it previously. I started running three, and now I do 4 miles a day, usually five or six days a week. And for me, that helps me. Like, now I'm addicted to that dopamine. But it also, then if I'm like, oh, I want to eat a whole Chicago-style deep dish pizza, the fact that I have to run the next day will maybe help me to only eat one-third, which is still three times too much. But.
Wait a second. Have you had a Chicago deep dish pizza since this pandemic began?
No, I've not.
You're not cooking that. That's not something you're whipping up in the kitchen.
No, no. I'm not sitting on 7 pounds of sausage at the moment.
Do you guys have a go-to dish that you've been eating during pandemic?
Nick makes a killer fucking grilled cheese sandwich.
Ooh. Mm.
We've been experimenting with cheeses.
So good.
Megan found some really obscure, like the sharper, the better cheddars. Mm-hmm. Little bit of smoked Gouda and Gruyere.
You put a little of that stanky cheese in there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what? My wife makes a mean grilled ches, and she made one for the boys yesterday, and they didn't eat all of it. And I saw it there, and I went ahead and snatched it. It had some roast beef in there, so I don't even think it's a grilled cheese. Ooh. Once there's like meat in there.
Mm. It depends on the proportions, but yeah, I mean, it's one thing about getting to spend this time at home together is we do get to comfort each other with delicious food items.
Mm-hmm.
What's your go-to right now?
My go-to, I've been cutting out the red meat. So what I just told you about that grilled cheese with the roast beef in it, you can go ahead and just delete that or...
That was naughty time.
Just realized that I didn't realize
you
what
didn't
I was
know.
Fighting. I thought it was a grilled cheese,
it was
okay?
An innocent,
I took a bite and then I was like, whoa, what's in there?
This is contraband.
But I've been rocking a lot of delicious chicken breast. which is not usually delicious because it's the driest part of the chicken. I like a wing or a leg, but
hit me with that. Sorry.
But lately I've been getting into this chicken breast with the right amount of mustard and accoutrement. I can power that down. I've been rocking a lot of fruits and veggies and just sort of keeping it real. I just eat whatever the boys don't eat, and they leave a lot. So that's where I'm really getting my nutrients. I'm a cleanup crew. I have a hard time throwing it away. It's like, it's still delicious.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now, here's what I want to just say real quick. I have this paranoia that we're about to wrap it up, and I've got all this fucking gold on my list. I was thinking maybe I could rapid fire them before the ending, so I can just touch on them lightly.
That sounds smart.
That sounds great.
Before you dive in, I couldn't let this last topic go by without saying, I don't know what your favorite dish is, but I'll order it from Zanzibar.
Okay,
Zanzibar is a lyric. That's from a lyric from FHG.
That's right.
A song, a Tenacious D song. And really, I just wanted to say Zanzibar. There is not really a restaurant that I go to called Zanzibar or that I order from. But I just love to say it's got two Z's in it. Zanzibar. What a great word. And I found out later, the birthplace of Freddie Mercury. Of Queen fame.
Cute.
He was born in Zanzibar.
Yeah, anyway, so go through your list and just give us like a 25 words or less.
Lately, I've been thinking about revolution a lot because it feels like in these troubled times, you can feel it bubbling.
Mm.
It's right beneath the surface.
It's coming.
And if you read the comments in the comment section, there's more and more like, you fucking rich bastard.
Mm-hmm.
You're sitting on your... And I was like, uh-oh.
Revolution.
I haven't felt this kind of revolution vibe in quite some time, if ever. That's like, it's becoming real. Like, oh, yeah. If the haves and the have-nots are too separated, at a certain point, the have-nots say, fuck this shit, storm the gates! And so I've realized, I don't want revolution.
No.
I want Bernie. Now, well, the thing about Bernie is... People said, no, Bernie is revolution. And I was like, no, Bernie's not revolution. Bernie's like saying, hey, let's change the system. Let's tax the fuck out of the rich.
Mm-hmm.
I'm for that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want, because revolution's not that. Revolution is fucking get him, drag him into the street and put his fucking head on a spike. I don't want that.
That doesn't sound good.
Sorry. Okay. Next thing, Instagram. Why doesn't Conan O'Brien follow me? He follows literally 7,000 people, okay? And not one of them. I don't make the cut. There's something going on there, okay? He's aggressively not following me on Instagram.
Oh, man. We're going to get to the bottom of
another
it.
Another quick topic. I don't think this is a good time to be selling tequila on the internet. enough said, not naming names. Another one, I'm gonna go Bob Dylan's new song. I don't think it's a song. I think it's a poem, 16 minutes long, but it is worth a listen, dude. He's fucking talking about John F. Kennedy's passing, but what he's talking about is hate. He's talking about right now, and I was like fucking, I was like kind of blown away. But then also he goes on a long, like 10-minute list of names of people that have been on the radio since John F. Kennedy was assassinated. And I don't quite understand the point of that, but listen to that song. My hands, second to last one, my hands are crispy from too much washing the hands. I got like little
little nubbies.
Sometimes they'll start to bleed. So I've been putting on a little. That's when I reach for Aquaphor.
Look. Aquaphor.
We're both holding Aquaphors.
Yeah. And marketing.
We're not getting paid by Aquaphor, by the way.
No, not yet.
That Aquaphor, a little coat, that'll coat your hands.
Last but not least, I got to watch this Guided by Voices documentary, Watch Me Jumpstart. Have you heard about this?
Oh, no, I didn't know about that. I used to love Guided by Voices.
Exactly. I think it's time for us to re-up on
What's
our Guided by Voices. It's called Watch Me Jumpstart.
Ooh, I'm
and I've always been obsessed with that guy, Pollard, the lead singer, writer of the songs. And I think he's a genius. And I want to get, I think there might be, you might get a little glimpse into the mind behind the music.
Oh, man.
What an incredible, resplendent buffet of delights you have presented us.
Oh, my God.
Jack Black.
Yeah, those are all the things that I've just been thinking about.
I have a whole new list of things that I desperately want to watch right now, too, thanks to you. So I appreciate that.
You were, if I had children, if I was responsible for raising children, Megan and I clearly are from the school of thought that all language should be welcome at the dinner table.
Unless it's hurting another person, racial epithets.
Agreed.
Right.
Just saying fuck and shit. I mean, who fucking cares? I mean, the cat is so far out of the bag. People who are like, well, don't curse. I'm like, seriously? And yet you're a horrible racist? Is that fine?
But whenever someone suggests that maybe we should be a little more, when Tipper Gore comes in wanting to censor our two live crew records, I would like to offer them Jack Black as a symbol of joy and positivity and generosity. Who says motherfucker like nobody's business?
Yeah.
Come
on. Let's have actual values that mean something and that make us be kind to other people instead of worrying about saying fuck.
I agree. No, profanity is only harmful if you're harming someone in the process. Like you say, let's just steer clear of the racism and the sexism and the homophobia. You can drop some F-bombs, drop them all you like. Those bombs aren't hurting anybody.
That's right. Jackie Blackie, Jacqueline Blacklin. That's another one. We love you, and we're so glad you did the podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Please give our best to your family.
Yeah, and
I will.
Let's get in a little Hayden Triplets plug here because I've been
Hayden Triplets.
Yeah, Family Songbook is their new record. It's so
incredible.
Good.
Yes, thank you for noticing and for mentioning. Incredible record. And also amazing cameo you did in their music video, Nick. Thank you so much.
It was a privilege.
It was hilarious.
I'm such a fan of them.
I was so stoked to hear that you're doing that. So, check out Hayden Triplets. They were going to be on tour right now, by the way. They would have been on tour, I think, in Nashville. So look for them when the smoke settles, and they'll be coming to a town near you, and you can't miss them. Those blood harmonies, as the Leuven brothers used to say.
So Jack is married to Tanya, and she's a triplet, and her sister Petra, one of her sisters, is in my band Nancy and Beth.
Always awesome collabs you guys have together.
So good.
Love it.
All right. All right, darling. We love you.
Love you guys.
Thank you.
Next time, I'm looking forward to crawling into bed with y'all.
Amen.
Yeah. This has been another installment of The Immortal In Bed with Nick and Megan, featuring the beautiful Jackie Blackie.
Good night.
Good night.
Nighty night.
In Bed with Nick and Megan is an Earwolf production. It's produced by Megan Mullally, Kevin Bartelt, and Michael Landry. Executive produced by Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon. Music by Nancy and Beth, which can be found at www.nancyandbeth.com. If you enjoyed In Bed with Nick and Megan, make sure to rate it and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.